Chapter 2. In my dream, I know I'm falling, though there is no up or down, no walls or sides or ceilings, just the sensation of cold and darkness everywhere. I'm so scared I could scream, but when I open my mouth, nothing happens. And I wonder, if you fall forever and ever and never touch down, is it really still falling? I think I will fall forever. A noise punctuates the silence. A thin bleeding, growing louder and louder until it's like a scythe of metal slicing the air, slicing into me. Then I wake up. My alarm has been blaring for 20 minutes. It's 6:50 a.m. I sit up in bed, pushing away the comforter. I'm covered with sweat, even though my room is cold. My throat is dry, and I'm desperate for water, like I've just been running a long way. For a second, when I look around the room, everything seems fuzzy and slightly distorted, like I'm not really looking at my room, but only at a transparency of my room that's been laid down incorrectly so the corners don't match up with the real thing. Then the light shifts and everything looks normal again. All at once, it comes back to me and blood starts pounding in my head. The party, Juliet Sykes, the argument with Kent. Thammy! My door swings open, banging once against the wall, and Izzy comes galloping across the room, stepping all over my notebooks and discarded jeans and my Victoria's Secret team pink sweatshirt. Something seems wrong. Something skirts the edges of my memory, but then it is gone, and Izzy is bouncing on my bed, throwing her arms around me. They are hot. She curls a fist around the necklace I always wear, a thin gold chain with a tiny bird charm hanging from it, a gift from my grandmother, and tugs gently. Mommy said you have to get up. Her breath smells like peanut butter, and it's not until I push her off me that I realize how badly I'm shaking. It's Saturday, I say. I have no idea how I got home last night. I have no idea what happened to Lindsay or Elodie or Allie, and just thinking about it makes me sick. Izzy starts giggling like a maniac and bounces off the bed, scurrying back toward the door. She disappears down the hallway, and I hear her call out, Mommy! Thammy won't get up! She says my name, Thammy. Don't make me come up there, Sammy! My mom's voice echoes from the kitchen. I put my feet on the ground. The feel of the cold wood reassures me. When I was younger, I would lie on the floor all summer when my dad refused to turn the air conditioning on. It was the only place that stayed cool. I'm tempted to do the same thing now. I feel feverish. Rob. The rain, the sound of bottles shattering in the woods. My phone chimes, making me jump. I reach over and flip it open. There's a new text from Lindsay. I'm outside. Where are you? I snap my phone shut quickly, but not before I see the date blinking up at me. Friday, February 12th. Yesterday. Another chime, another text. Don't make me late on Cupid Day, biatch. I suddenly feel like I'm moving underwater, like I'm weightless or watching myself from a distance. I try to stand up, but when I do, my stomach bottoms out and I have to rush to the bathroom in the hall, legs shaking, certain I'm going to throw up. I lock the door and turn on the water in both the sink and the shower. Then I stand over the toilet. My stomach clenches on itself, but nothing comes up. The car, the skidding, the screams. Yesterday. I hear voices in the hallway, but the water's rushing so hard I can't make them out. It's not until someone starts pounding on the door that I straighten up and yell, What? Get out of the shower! There's no time! It's Lindsay. My mom's let her in. I crack the door a little, and there she is, her big, puffy jacket zipped to her chin, looking pissed. I'm happy to see her, anyway. She looks so normal, so familiar. What happened last night? I say. She frowns for a second. Yeah, sorry about that. I couldn't call back. I didn't get off the phone with Patrick until like 3 a.m. Call back? I shake my head. No, I meant he was freaking out over the fact that his parents are going to Acapulco without him. She rolls her eyes. Poor baby. I swear to you, Sam, guys are like pets. Feed him, pet him, and put him to bed. She leans forward. Speaking of which, are you excited about tonight? What? I don't even know what she's talking about. Her words are all running past me, blurring together. I'm holding onto the towel rack, afraid I'll fall over. The shower is on way too hot, and there's thick steam everywhere, clouding up the mirror, condensing on the tiles. You rob some Miller Lite and his flannel sheets? She laughs. Very romantic. I have to shower. I try to close the door, but she wedges her elbow in at the last second and pushes into the bathroom. You haven't showered yet? She shakes her head. Uh-uh. No way. You'll have to do without. She reaches into the shower and turns off the water, then grabs me by the hand and drags me into the hallway. You definitely need some makeup, though, she says, scanning my face. You look like shit. Nightmares? Something like that. I have my MAC stuff in the tank. She unzips her coat and I see a white tuft of fur peeking out from her cleavage. Our Cupid Day tank tops. I suddenly have the urge to sit down on the floor and laugh and laugh, and I have to struggle not to have a fit right there while Lindsay's shoving me into my room. Get dressed, she says, and pulls out her cell phone, probably to text Elodie we're going to be late. She watches me for a second and then sighs, turning away. Hope Rob doesn't mind a little B.O., she says, and as she giggles over this, I start pulling on my clothes, the tank top, the skirt, the boots. Again. Does this straitjacket make my butt look big? When Elodie gets into the car, she leans forward to grab her coffee, and the smell of her perfume, raspberry body spray she still buys religiously from the body shop in the mall, even though it stopped being cool in seventh grade, is so real and sharp and familiar, I have to close my eyes, overwhelmed. Bad idea. With my eyes shut, I see the beautiful warm lights of Kent's house receding in the rearview mirror and the sleek black trees crowding on either side of us like skeletons. I smell burning. I hear Lindsay yelling and feel my stomach bottom out as the car lurches to one side, tires squealing. Shit. I snap my eyes open as Lindsay swerves to avoid a squirrel. She chucks her cigarette out the window and the smell of smoke is strangely double. I'm not sure whether I'm smelling it or remembering it, or both. You really are the worst driver, Elodie giggles. Be careful, please, I mutter. I'm clutching the sides of my seat without meaning to. Don't worry, Lindsay leans over and pats my knee. I won't let my best friend die a virgin. I'm desperate to spill everything to Lindsay and Elodie at that moment, to ask them what's happening to me, to us, but I can't think of any way to say it. We were in a car accident after a party that hasn't happened yet. I thought I died yesterday. I thought I died. Tonight. Elodie must think I'm quiet because I'm worried about Rob. She loops her arms around the back of my seat and leans forward. Don't worry, Sam. You'll be fine. It's just like riding a bike, Elodie says. I try to force a smile, but I can barely focus. It seems like a long time ago that I went to bed imagining being side by side with Rob, imagining the feel of his cool, dry hands. Thinking about him makes me ache, and my throat threatens to close up. I suddenly can't wait to see him, can't wait to see his crooked smile and his Yankees hat and even his dirty fleece that always smells a little bit like boy sweat, even after his mom makes him wash it. It's like riding a horse. Lindsay corrects Elodie. You'll be a blue ribbon champion in no time, Sammy. I always forget you used to ride horses. Elodie flips open the lid of her coffee and blows steam off the top. When I was like 7, I say, before Lindsay can turn this into a joke. I think if she starts making fun of me now, I really will cry. I could never explain the truth to her. That riding was my favorite thing in the world. I loved to be alone in the woods, especially in the late fall when everything is crisp and golden, the leaves the color of fire, and it smells like things turning into earth. I loved the silence, the only sound the steady drum of the hooves and the horses breathing. No phones, no laughter, no voices, no houses, no cars. I flipped the visor down to keep the glare out of my eyes, and in the mirror I see Elodie smiling at me. Maybe I'll tell her what's happening to me, I think. But at the same time, I know that I won't. She would think I was crazy. They all would. I keep quiet and look out the window. The light is weak and watery looking, like the sun has just spilled itself over the horizon and is too lazy to clean itself up. The shadows are as sharp and pointed as needles. I watch three black crows take off simultaneously from a telephone wire and wish I could take off too. Move up, 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 and watch the ground drop away from me the way it does when you're on an airplane, folding and compressing into itself like an origami figure until everything is flat and brightly colored, until the whole world is like a drawing of itself. Theme song, please, Lindsay says, and I scroll through her iPod until I find the Mary J. Blige, then lean back and try not to think of anything except the music and the beat. And I keep my eyes open. By the time we pull into the drive that winds past the upper parking area and down to the faculty lot and senior alley, I'm actually feeling better. Even though Lindsay's cursing and Elodie's complaining that one more tardy will get her Friday detention, and it's already 2 minutes after first bell. Everything looks so normal. I know that because it's Friday, Emma McElroy will be coming from Evan Danzig's house, and sure enough, there she is, ducking through a clipped portion of the fence. I know Peter Kort will be wearing a pair of Nike Air Force Ones he's had for a million years because he wears them every day, even though there are so many holes in them you can see what color socks he's wearing, usually black. I watch them go flashing by as he books it down toward the main building. Seeing all these things makes me feel 1,000 times better, and I start thinking maybe all of yesterday, everything that happened, was just some kind of long, strange dream. Lindsay cruises down to the senior alley, even though there's zero chance of finding a spot. It's a religion for her. My stomach dips when we pass the third spot from the tennis courts, and there's Sarah Grundle's brown Chevrolet with its Thomas Jefferson swim team sticker, and another one, smaller, that reads, "Get Wet," staring at me from the bumper. I think, she got the last spot because we're so late. And I have to squeeze my nails into my palms and repeat to myself that I've only been dreaming, that none of this has happened before.
I can't believe we have to walk 0.22 miles, Elodie says, pouting. I don't even have a jacket.
You're the one who left the house half naked, Lindsay says.
It is February.
I didn't know I'd be outside.
We pass the soccer field on our right as we loop back toward Upper Lot. At this time of year, the fields are all churned up, just mud and a few patches of brown grass.
I feel like I'm having deja vu, Elodie says. Flashback to freshman year, you know?
I've been having deja vu all morning, I blurt out before I can stop myself. Instantly, I feel better, sure that that's what this is.
Let me guess.
Lindsay brings one hand to her temples and frowns, pretending to concentrate.
You're having flashbacks to the last time Elodie was this annoying before 9 a.m.
Shut up! Elodie leans forward and smacks Lindsay's arm, and they start laughing. I smile, too, relieved to have spoken the words out loud. It makes sense. One time, on a trip to Colorado, my parents and I hiked up 3 miles to this little waterfall smack in the middle of the woods. The trees were big and old, all of them pine. The clouds were streaked across the sky like spun sugar. Izzy was too young to walk or talk. She was riding in my dad's baby backpack, and she kept punching her tiny fat fist at the sky like she wanted to grab it. Anyway, as we were standing there, watching the spray of water on the rocks, I had the craziest feeling that it had all happened before. Down to the smell of the orange my mom was peeling and the exact reflections of the trees in the surface of the water. I was positive. It became the big joke that day, because I'd complained about having to hike 3 miles, and when I told my parents I was having deja vu, they kept laughing and saying, it really would be a miracle if I'd ever agreed to walk that far in a past life. I guess my point is only that I was sure then, just like I'm feeling sure now. It happens. Oh, Elodie squeals and starts digging through her purse. She knocks out a pack of cigarettes and two empty tubes of lip gloss, plus a misshapen eyelash curler. I almost forgot your present. She sends the condom sailing over the front seat, and Lindsay claps her hands and bounces in her seat when I hold it up. No glove, no love, I say, managing a smile. Elodie leans forward and kisses my cheek, leaving a ring of pink gloss. You're going to be great, kid. Don't call me that, I say, and drop the condom in my bag. We step out of the car, and the air is so cold my eyes sting and start to water. I ignore the bad feeling buzzing through me, and I think, this is my day. This is my day. This is my day. So I can't think of anything else. A shadow world. I read once that you get deja vu when the two halves of your brain process things at different speeds, the right half a few seconds before the left, or vice versa. Science is probably my worst subject, so I didn't understand the whole article, but that would explain the weird double feeling that it leaves you with, like the world is splitting in half, or you are. That's the way I feel, at least. Like, there's a real me and a reflection of me, and I have no way of telling which is which. The thing about deja vu is that it has always passed really quickly. 30 seconds. A minute, at most. But this doesn't pass. Everything is the same. Eileen Cho squealing over her roses in first period, and Samara Phillips leaning over and crooning, "He must really love you." I pass the same people in the halls at the same time. Aaron Stern spills his coffee all over the hallway again, and Carol Lynn starts screaming at him again. Even her words are the same. Were you dropped on your head one too many times or something? I have to admit it's pretty funny, even the second time around. Even when I feel like I'm crazy, even when I feel like I could scream. But even weirder are the little blips and wrinkles, the things that have shifted around. Sarah Grundle, for example. On my way to second period, I see her standing against a bank of lockers, twirling her goggles around her index finger and talking to Hillary Hale. As I walk by, I catch just a bit of their conversation.
So excited. I mean, coach says my time could still go down by a half second.
We have 2 weeks before the semis. You can totally do it. I stop dead when I hear this. Sarah sees me staring at her and gets really uncomfortable. She smooths her hair and tugs on her skirt, which is riding up on her waist. Then she waves.
Hey, Sam,
she says. She pulls on her skirt again. Were you... I take a deep breath to keep from stuttering like an idiot. Were you just talking about semifinals? For swim team?
Yeah.
Sarah's face lights up.
Are you gonna come?
Even though I'm freaking out, it still occurs to me that this is a really stupid question. I've never gone to a swim meet in my life, and the idea of sitting on a slimy tile floor and watching Sarah Grundle splash around in a bathing suit is about as appealing as the chow mein from Hunan Kitchen. To be honest, the only sporting event I ever go to is homecoming, and after 4 years, I still don't understand any of the rules. Lindsay usually brings a flask of something for the four of us to share, so that could have something to do with it. I thought you weren't competing. I try hard to act casual. I heard some rumor, like maybe you were late and the coach freaked out.
You heard a rumor about me?
Sarah's eyes go wide and she looks like I just handed her a winning lotto ticket. I guess she's of the no press is bad press philosophy. I guess I was wrong. I think of seeing her car in the third to last spot and feel heat flood my face. Of course she wasn't late today. Of course she's still competing. She didn't have to walk from upper lot today. She was late yesterday. My head starts pounding and suddenly I just want to get out of there. Hillary's looking at me strangely.
Are you okay? You look really pale.
Yeah, fine. Bad sushi last night. I put one hand on the lockers to steady myself. Stair starts babbling about the time she got food poisoning from the mall, but I'm already walking away, feeling like the hallway is rolling and buckling underneath me. Deja vu. It's the only explanation. If you repeat something enough, you can almost make yourself believe it. I'm feeling so shaken up, I almost forget that Allie's waiting for me in the bathroom by the science wing. I go into the stall and flip the lid of a toilet down and just sit there, only half listening while she babbles. I remember something Mrs. Harbour once said on one of her crazy tangents in English, that Plato believed that the whole world, everything we can see, was just like shadows on a cave wall. We can't actually see the real thing, the thing that's casting the shadow in the first place. I have that feeling now, of being surrounded by shadows, like I'm seeing the impression of the thing before the thing itself. Hello? Are you even listening to me? Allie rattles the door and I look up, startled. I notice AC equals WT scrawled on the inside of the door. Below it, a smaller note reads, "Go back to the trailer, ho." You said pretty soon you'd have to shop for bras in the maternity section, I say automatically. Of course I wasn't really listening, not this time anyway. I'm wondering vaguely why Lindsay came all the way down here to write on the bathroom wall. Why it was important to her, I mean. She'd already written it a dozen times in the stalls across from the cafeteria, and that's the bathroom everyone uses. I'm not even sure why she dislikes Anna. And it reminds me that I still don't know when she started hating Juliet Sykes so much either. It's weird how much you can know about someone without knowing everything. You'd think someday you'd come to the end of it. I stand up and swing the door open, pointing to the graffiti. When did Lindsay do this? Allie rolls her eyes. She didn't. Copycat artist. Really? Uh-huh. There's one in the girls' locker room, too. Copycat. She whips her hair into a ponytail and starts pinching her lips to make them swell up. It's so lame. We can't do anything in this school without everyone doing the same thing. Lame. I run my fingers over the words. They're thick and black, like worms drawn in permanent marker. I wonder briefly whether Anna uses this bathroom. We should sue for copyright infringement. Can you imagine? $20 for every time somebody bites our style. We'd be rolling in it. She giggles. Mint? Allie holds out an Altoids tin. Even though she's still a virgin and will be for the foreseeable future, or at least until she goes to college, since she's completely obsessed with Matt Wilde, she insists on taking birth control pills, which she keeps crumpled up in their foil pack right there alongside her mints. She claims it so her dad won't find them. But everyone knows she likes to flash them during class so that people will think she's having sex. Not that anybody's fooled. Thomas Jefferson is small. You know these things. One time, Elodie told Allie she had pregnancy breath, and we all died over it. It was junior year in May, and we were all lying out on Allie's trampoline. It was the Saturday morning after she'd had one of her best parties yet. We were all just a little hungover, our brains fuzzy, stuffed on all the pancakes and bacon we'd put down at the diner, totally happy. I lay there while the trampoline dipped and swayed, closing my eyes against the sun, wishing that the day would never end. The bell rings and Allie squeals, "Oh, we're gonna be late!" Again, that pit opens in my stomach. A part of me is tempted to hide all day in the bathroom, but I can't. I know you know what happens next. That I get to Kem late? That I take the last seat next to Lauren Lornet? That Mr. Tierney passes out a quiz with 3 questions on it? The worst part of it? I've seen the quiz before, and I still don't know the answers. I ask to borrow a pen. Lauren starts whispering to me. She wants to know if it's working okay. Mr. Tierney's book comes down with a bang. Everyone jumps but me. Class, bell, class, bell. Crazy. I'm going crazy. By the time the roses get delivered in math class, my hands are shaking. I take a deep breath before I open the little laminated card attached to the rose Rob sent me. I imagine it will say something incredible, something surprising, something that will make everything better. You're beautiful, Sam. I'm so happy to be with you. Sam, I love you. I lift the corner of the card gently and peek inside. Love you. I close the card quickly and put it in my bag.
Wow, it's beautiful.
I look up. The girl dressed like an angel is standing there, staring at the rose she just laid on my desk. Pink and cream petals swirled together like ice cream. She still has her hand outstretched and tiny blue veins crisscross her skin like a web.
Take a picture. It'll last longer.
I snap at her. She blushes as red as the roses she's holding and stammers out an apology. I don't bother reading the note that's attached to this one, and for the rest of the class, I keep my eyes glued to the blackboard to avoid any sign from Kent. I'm concentrating so hard on not looking at him, I almost miss it when Mr. Daimler winks at me and smiles. Almost. After class, Kent catches up with me holding the pink and cream rose, which I'd deliberately left on my desk.
You forgot this, he says.
As always, his hair is flopping over one eye.
It's okay, you can say it. I'm amazing.
I didn't forget it. I'm struggling not to look at him. I didn't want it. I sneak a glance at him and see his smile fade for a second. Then it's back on, full force, like a friggin' laser beam.
What do you mean?
He tries to pass it to me.
Didn't anybody ever tell you that the more roses you get on Cupid Day, the more popular you are?
I don't think I need any help in that department, especially from you. His smile definitely drops then. Part of me hates what I'm doing, but all I can think of is the memory or dream or whatever it is when he leans in and I think he's going to kiss me, I'm sure of it, but instead he whispers, I see right through you. You don't know me. You don't know anything about me.
Thank God.
I dig my nails into my palms.
I never said the rose was from me, he says.
His voice is so low and serious it startles me. I meet his eyes. They're bright green. I remember when I was little, my mom used to say that God mixed the grass and Kent's eyes from the same color.
Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious.
I just want him to stop looking at me like that. He takes a deep breath.
Look, I'm having a party tonight.
That's when I see Rob loping into the cafeteria. Normally, I would wait for him to notice me, but today I can't.
Rob!
I yell out. He turns and sees me, gives me half a wave, and starts to turn around again.
Rob, wait!
I take off down the hallway. I'm not exactly running. Lindsay, Allie, Elodie, and I made a pact years ago never to run on school grounds, not even in gym class. Let's face it, sweating and huffing aren't exactly attractive. But it's a close call.
Whoa, slamster! Where's the fire?
Rob puts his arms around me and I bury my nose in his fleece. It smells a little like old pizza. Not the best smell, especially when it's mixed with lemon balm, but I don't care. My legs are shaking so badly, I'm afraid they'll give out. I just want to stand there forever, holding on to him. I missed you, I say into his chest. For a second, his arms tense around me, but when he tilts my face up toward his, he's smiling.
To get my valigram?
He asks. I nod. Thanks. My throat is tight and I'm worried I'll start to cry. It feels so good to have his arms around me like he's the only thing holding me up. Listen, Rob, about tonight, I'm not even sure what I'm going to say, but he cuts me off.
Okay. What is it now?
I pull back just a little bit so I can look at him.
Things are all crazy today. I think I might be sick or something else.
He laughs and pinches my nose with two fingers.
Oh, no. You are not getting out of this one.
He puts his forehead to mine and whispers.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
I know. Me too. I've imagined it so many times, the way the moon will be dipping past the trees and coming through the windows and lighting up triangles and squares on the walls, the way his fleece blanket will feel against my bare skin when I take my clothes off. And then I've imagined the moment afterward, after Rob has kissed me and told me he loved me and fallen asleep with his mouth just parted, and I sneak off to the bathroom and text Elodie and Lindsay and Allie. I did it. It's the middle part that's harder to picture. I feel my phone buzz in my back pocket. A new text. My stomach flips. I already know what it will say. You're right, I say to Rob, squeezing my arms around him. Maybe I should come over right after school. We can hang out all afternoon. All night.
You're cute.
Rob pulls away, adjusts his hat and his backpack.
My parents don't clear out till dinner time, though.
I don't care. We can watch a movie or something. Besides, Rob's looking over my shoulder now.
I heard about some party at what's-his-name's dude with the bowler hat. Ken?
Kent, I say automatically. Rob knows his name, obviously. Everyone knows everyone here, but it's a power thing. I remember telling Kent, I shouldn't even know your name, and feel queasy. Voices are swelling through the hall, and people start passing Rob and me. I can feel them staring. They're probably hoping for a fight.
Yeah, Kent. I might stop by for a while. We can meet up there.
You really want to go? I'm trying to squash the panic welling up inside me. I lower my head and look up at him the way I've seen Lindsay do with Patrick when she's really desperate for something. It'll just mean less time with me.
We'll have plenty of time.
Rob kisses his fingers and taps them twice against my cheek.
Trust me. Have I ever let you down?
You'll let me down tonight. The thought comes to me before I can stop it.
No,
I say too loudly. Rob's not listening, though. Adam Marshall and Jeremy Forker have just joined us, and they're all doing the greeting thing where they jump on one another and wrestle. Sometimes I think Lindsay's right, and guys are just like animals. I pull out my phone to check my text, though I don't really need to.
Party at Kent McFreaky's tonight. In?
My fingers are numb as I text back. Ob. Then I go into lunch, feeling like the sound of 300 voices has weight, like it's a solid wind that will carry me up, up, and away. Before I wake.
So? You nervous?
Lindsay lifts one leg in the air and swivels it back and forth, admiring the shoes she's just stolen from Allie's closet. Music thumps from the living room. Allie and Elodie are out there singing their heads off to Like a Prayer. Allie's not even close to on key. Lindsay and I are lying on our backs on Allie's Mongo bed. Everything in Allie's house is 25% bigger than in a normal person's. The fridge, the leather chairs, the televisions, even the magnums of champagne her dad keeps in the wine cellar. Strictly hands off. Lindsay once said it made her feel like Alice in Wonderland. I settle my head against an enormous pillow that says, "The bitch is in." I've had 4 shots already, thinking it would calm me down, and above me the lights are winking and blurring. We've cracked all the windows open, but I'm still feeling feverish.
Don't forget to breathe,
Lindsay's saying.
Don't freak out if it hurts a little, especially at first. Don't tense up. You'll make it worse.
I'm feeling pretty nauseous, and Lindsay's not making it better. I couldn't eat all day, so by the time we got to Allie's house, I was starving and scarfed about 25 of the toast pesto goat cheese snacks that Allie whipped up. I'm not sure how well the goat cheese is mixing with the vodka. On top of it, Lindsay made me eat about 7 Listerine breath strips because the pesto had garlic in it, and she said Rob would feel like he was losing his virginity to an Italian line cook. I'm not even that nervous about Rob. I mean, I can't focus on being nervous about him. The party, the drive, the possibility of what will happen there, that's what's really giving me stomach cramps. At least the vodka's helped me breathe, and I'm not feeling shaky anymore. Of course, I can't tell Lindsay any of this, so instead I say, I'm not gonna freak. I mean, everybody does it, right? If Anna Cartullo can do it. Lindsay pulls a face.
Ew. Whatever you're doing, it's not what Anna Cartullo does. You and Rob are making love.
She puts quotes in the air with her fingers and giggles. but I can tell she means it. You think?
Of course.
She tilts her head to look at me.
You don't?
I want to ask, how do you know the difference? In movies, you can always tell when people are supposed to be together because music swells up behind them. Dumb, but true. Lindsay's always saying she couldn't live without Patrick, and I'm not sure if that's how you're supposed to feel or not. Sometimes when I'm standing in the middle of a crowded place with Rob and he puts his arm around my shoulders and pulls me close, like he doesn't want me to get bumped or spilled on or whatever, I feel a kind of heat in my stomach, like I've just had a glass of wine and I'm completely happy just for that second. I'm pretty sure that's what love is. So I say to Lindsay, of course I do. Lindsay giggles again and nudges me.
So? Did he bite the bullet and just say it?
Say what? She rolls her eyes.
That he loves you.
I pause for just a second too long, thinking of his note. Love ya. The kind of thing you pencil in somebody's yearbook when you don't know what else to say. Lindsay rushes on.
He will. Guys are idiots. Bet you he says it tonight, just after you.
She trails off and starts humping her hips up and down. I smack her with a pillow.
You're a dog, you know that?
She growls at me and bares her teeth. We laugh and then lie in silence for a minute, listening to Elodie's and Allie's howls from the other room. They're on to Total Eclipse of the Heart now. It feels nice to be lying there. Nice and normal. I think of all the times we must have laid in exactly this spot. Waiting for Elodie and Allie to finish getting ready, waiting to go out, waiting for something to happen, time ticking and then falling away, lost forever. And I suddenly wish I could remember each one singularly, like somehow if I could remember them all, I could have them back. Were you nervous? The first time, I mean? I'm kind of embarrassed to ask, so I say it quietly. I think the question catches Lindsay off guard. She blushes and starts picking at the braiding on Allie's bedspread, and for a moment there's an awkward silence. I'm pretty sure I know what she's thinking, though I would never say it out loud. Lindsay, Allie, Elodie, and I are as close as you can be, but there are still some things we never talk about. For example, even though Lindsay says Patrick is her first and only, this isn't technically true. Technically, her first was a guy she met at a party when she was visiting her stepbrother at NYU. They smoked pot, split a six-pack, and had sex. And he never knew she hadn't done it before. We don't talk about that. We don't talk about the fact that we can never hang out at Elodie's house after 5 o'clock because her mother will be home and drunk. We don't talk about the fact that Allie never eats more than a quarter of what's on her plate, even though she's obsessed with cooking and watches the Food Network for hours on end. We don't talk about the joke that for years trailed me down hallways into classrooms and on the bus that wove its way into my dreams. What's red and white and weird all over? Sam Kingston. And we definitely don't talk about the fact that Lindsay was the one who made it up. A good friend keeps your secrets for you. A best friend helps you keep your own secrets.